I'm Bill Castle, and this is Free Expression. This program is all about conveying the Christian message from a Catholic point of view and defending the liberty which makes it possible to do that. We talk with creative, interesting people planning an important faith event for men and doing much-needed research on what keeps people in church and why some leave. Join us. Sit back and enjoy some free expression. What do people believe? We assume that those who identify themselves as Christians share certain basic theological beliefs, with some variation from church to church, of course. But in truth, it's not always easy to pin down those premises that comprise people's faith. And among the wide set of assumptions on which people base their religious lives, which ideas are the most important to them? ACS Technologies is a company that analyzes data for churches, and that firm recently conducted an extensive survey of more than 15,000 Christians examining these questions. Terry Poplava represents ACS, and he's here to give us a picture of the current state of American faith life. Terry, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Bill. Glad to be here.
Well, what are some of the insights that you drew about people's beliefs at this point in Christian history?
I think that the big thing for us is the trends, because we've done this survey three times over a period of roughly 4 years in between the three times. One of the big things that I think is of concern to me personally, and given our expectation that our church organizations, you know, certainly for Catholic, are that our parish, our church is very important, and we receive the source and summit of our faith there, is that the belief in Jesus does not require participating in a church. That changed overall from 50% of people agreeing to 63% of all Christians. And disturbingly, Bill, for Catholics, it increased to 69% of Catholics who believe that belief in Jesus doesn't require participating in a church. So I found that kind of challenging for us. You know, there are a number of reasons people are staying away from church, and they are a belief that religious people are too judgmental and too focused on money, and they don't trust our religious leaders. And I think we all have ideas what we might point to as being some of those reasons. I do wonder, though, a little bit if we're having a little bit of a challenge with the leadership and our ability to really lead our people forward in our parishes. So those two things both stood out to me. I guess the other thing I would just say, Bill, that's really disturbing is that overall, a large percentage of the population identifies as Christian. Some 69% of the people in the United States consider themselves Christian. Now, that is a much smaller number who are actively participating in a church. But over the last 10 years, the equivalent of the population of Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York have left Christianity and now have no religion. So they've moved from having identified as Christian to not identifying as anything. I guess we'd call them the nuns or the de-churched. A very large number of people, 15 million people.
When people say that they identify as Christian, is it your impression that that's a specifically religious explanation, or is it a cultural thing? You know, I've grown up in a Christian culture, therefore I'm a Christian.
I don't know if we can absolutely pinpoint that. I think it's probably the latter, that people have grown up in a Christian faith. When you look at what we're experiencing in the Catholic Church, this whole idea of moving from Christendom, where we're just expected because it's the behavioral norm, to now a society where it's not necessarily considered the norm or even central, that we might have considered ourselves to have some sense of faith. I also think perhaps it's that people do have a sense they need to believe in something in order to have some base, some central tenet, some idea for behavior, and that Christianity is pretty widespread in the country. So it seems like it's probably mostly a cultural norm and expectation. I don't know that we really can identify that internal thinking very clearly unless we ask for some self-identification from people.
It's been my observation that in the past, people having had a clearer sense of identity with a particular church would define their religious awareness as that particular denomination. I believe in the church. I believe in this whole specific set of theological teachings. Now, I guess what I hear you saying is that people say, I may or may not believe in God, I may or may not believe in Jesus, but it's not the church as such that I'm identifying with. Is that correct?
I think that's right. And I think some of it is also generational, Bill. When we look at some of our further analysis that we're just putting out in reporting is that the strength of alignment with traditional Christianity in mainline tradition as well as and Catholic is, you know, much clearer among the silent generation and baby boomers. And it's an interesting mix and change in expectations as you get to millennial and Gen Z. So I do think there's an effect of society and whether or not our own people have been really fully formed and our parents are able to guide us. So I think there's both a family effect as well as a societal effect that is moving people from the sense of being part of a particular denominational alignment and more of a general sense of whether or not we behave well toward each other. When you look at some of the core beliefs, do they believe in Jesus or that he rose from the dead, et cetera? We're seeing that kind of thing decrease. 52% of people who filled out the surveys agree that Jesus rose from the dead, and 42% that Jesus is the only way for salvation, and 38% that Jesus lived a perfect, sinless life while on earth. When you pull Catholic out of that specifically and separately and look at some of this, only 45% of Catholics who responded said Jesus was both divine and human. 39% that Jesus rules now and always, and 44% that Jesus actually rose from the dead. Those aren't very high numbers for what I would consider core to what we believe. So it even points to something deeper, I think, in this question of alignment with a denominational set of beliefs.
Do you think that this is a specific failing on the part of the church and religious education, or does it reflect more of the pop idea that, you know, we're scientific now, we've moved beyond ancient superstition, we believe in the facts that can be demonstrated in a laboratory? What's the mindset that's driving this?
I think, you know, it's a really good question, and I, you know, a combination of looking at some of this data and, frankly, my own ideas, I think we are certainly, you could say, at war with all of the generalization, the secularization of society, the loss of what it means to be community. So there are many, many reasons. But I also think we internally, as church, have failed ourselves in a number of ways. You know, mostly I've been looking at the Catholic Church itself. I speak most comfortably from the view of Catholics specifically, but I do think it's true when I talk to some of my other denominational colleagues that we have not practiced good communication, good relational, good directional skills. If you look at the research that Al Wensman did in 2013 that led to Gallup's StrengthsFinder, that work was cross-denominational, and it was focusing on what it meant to, his book was Growing an Engaged Church. And to paraphrase very high level, he talked about levels of what it meant to be engaged in a church, starting with an initial experience of what do I get? So many of us in an organization are looking for what we get out of it. Secondly, what can I give as I get a little bit more deeply involved? Thirdly, and importantly, do I belong here? Do I have a friend? Do I have a community? Followed by, where are we going and are we growing? So the increasing levels of engagement actually become very much about community and very much about both belonging and then a sense of direction of the organization. I point all that out for two reasons. One is this shift from our very, very traditional teaching of teach the faith, catechize, teach about what we believe, and that's all you need to do, shifting to really belonging leads to believing. To me, that's a fundamental shift, but also that it's important to us to think about that our relational aspects of church are very critical to us. The second one is that there's a sense of direction so that we're not just showing up, we're actually going somewhere. And so having a sense of a vision, a set of, you know, a mission, some priorities for the organization, some of those businessy things become really important for having people have a sense of where you're going as an organization. So all of that long explanation to say some of this that we became lax about because we expected that people were just going to show up, we relaxed a little too much on what it means to have a meaningful organization that really builds the community in the sense of belonging, in the sense of caring about each other. And then on top of the fact that we've become sort of, many, many individuals, and we're losing the sense of what it means to be community or why we should even care about being in community. I do think church has the answer, but we have to step up ourselves to demonstrating and showing what it means to be part of an organization that's a thriving organization.
What are the implications of this? It seems to me then what you're saying is that we have to build a greater sense of religious identity as a faith community. Where do we go from here? What does the church do? How do we adjust our approach?
Well, you know, without losing what we are as church, we still have to find a way to be welcoming and hospitable. So now I go to the bishop's pastoral letter on stewardship that's been out since the 70s and look at some of the best practices. Now, there are many things. I mean, stewardship is an expression of discipleship, so there's a personal journey and a personal commitment that has to be made. But part of it is about inviting, welcoming, being hospitable as an organization. And we have to find the path to engaging initially with people. So earlier on, we talked about the nuns. There's so many people who have left or don't have any relationship with a religion at all. There may be many reasons for it, but in order to even build an initial trusting relationship, we need to engage with those people, and it needs to be on a personal level. I think we've got to reach out and welcome people, be much more externally focused than internally, even while we're forming and inspiring the people who are in our churches and parishes. This idea of what does it mean to meaningfully engage to attract other people into a relationship, which has to become a trusted relationship, and allow them to search and then to feel part of the community and to belong because they have a sense of knowing who's there and a comfort with that, addresses a really big problem. Because one of the things that does come out in the data, and we see it in other reporting, is that we're lonely. We do all of these things. We have a lot of things we think we can do by ourselves, and so we're off by ourselves, and we don't have the sense of self that we'd like to have. I think the reporting says that a large percentage of teenagers have fewer than two trusted relationships in their lives. And so where can you have a trusted relationship, and can church fill that void? It should be able to. The other thing we see in our research that sort of points to this, and I think, is that across all denominations, including Catholic, when people are looking for a church to be part of, the top thing they're looking for is warm and friendly encounters. Warm and friendly encounters. Now, that sounds kind of fluffy, but I think that it points to this trusted relationship, starting from a bridge of trust, starting with the opportunity where you actually feel like you can be part of a community and someone's taken interest in you. You know, and Catholics, second you would expect, is celebration of the sacraments, and third, quality sermons. But this idea of a relational church does come very strongly in the top rankings of what we're looking for in an organization, while also having a high quality of what we do once you're in the organization.
So it falls to the priests to be better preachers, to be more open, and it falls to the people to pick up on the sense of community and actually engage people outside the circle and invite them in. I guess it's a sort of multi-pronged effect.
I think that's right. The caution I have is we're so traditionally expected to be the priest. You know, we're not doing our leaders a favor by continuing to expect them to do everything. Our priests are awesome, wonderful, holy people who are there for this sacramental purpose, but we, you know, I hate to have us run them into the ground. So the second part of what you said, I think, is so important, Bill, is that we all have this responsibility. We all need to take ownership to be part of the welcoming, hospitable, engaging. It can't be just the priest. It has to be all of us. And all of us have to take on essentially our apostolic role, which is challenging for us and very challenging from just historically for many of us. You know, I'm a cradle Catholic. That is very different for me to think about that role. And so it is challenging, but it's also part of what I think we need to be looking for to become really vibrant organizations.
There is some resistance to this. I would think that even all these years after Vatican II and its emphasis on lay participation, there are still a lot of people in the church who have deep reservations about putting more responsibility on the laity. How do we address that?
I agree with you, and we see it across the board that there is resistance to it. You know, Bill, I don't know what the great answer is for it. What I do see is if we don't do more with more people, having more people directly engage, then we are placing a burden on our pastor and the priest leadership that they're not able to hold up to. Would you agree with that? I mean, it's becoming more and more challenging.
Sure.
And obviously, we have many, many more challenges just as an organization. So it seems to me the answer has to be they need help, and they need their best people who are good Catholics, are good Christians, to be there to help them. So I think maybe it's more a question of what do we mean by engaging the laity, and what are the appropriate roles? A great role is hospitality. And it's not just like a few people or your usher leading you to your seat. It's very much about what is the ongoing process of identifying both people who are currently in the church, but also those who might be new or visiting, being able to spot them, being able to get their information, being able to follow up with them, being able to find ways to detect. I mean, the systems help us do this now. Did someone stop giving? Did they stop coming? Why? Did we reach out to them or not? These are all roles people can connect and offer prayer and just be part of a personal interest. That seems like a really good role for many of us in the church, and it takes a lot of people to do that across an organization and to keep it going.
Tell us a little bit about ACS Technologies and the kinds of services that you folks provide.
Well, thank you for asking that, Bill. It's an interesting company. ACS Technologies has been around for over 40 years now, and as you can tell from the name, is largely software, church software. It was established by a couple of guys who saw the need to have the ability to have a database in a church and created a database system and grew it into many, many, functions and now many, many related products to that, serving over 50,000 Christian organizations in the United States. And deeply committed to the mission of building the kingdom and providing personalized ministry experience for every person. We have the traditional types of software as well as strategic planning software that really informs, and some of it is based on this research that we do. The product is called Mission Insight. And Mission Insight is a resource that you can use multiple layers of information about who is in your church and who is in your community across lifestyles, as well as some of these religious beliefs and demographics, to get an understanding of who they are, where they are, and how maybe to reach them and how to communicate with them.
Now, you have a website. It's acstechnologies.com. If people go there, can they find the survey? Can they get more information about the data that you collected in this study?
The easiest place really to go is we did a separate website called AmericanBeliefs.com. That's the easiest place to find the reports that we've generated from this research. It's a very broad range of research. So what we've done is write reports on what we're finding, focused on community, focusing on what people believe, focusing on the impact of generation. So there's a lot of interesting information that you can find there.
AmericanBeliefs.com. Terry Poplova of ACS Technologies, thanks a lot for taking time to speak with us. This really raises a lot of questions that deserve very careful scrutiny. I hope that our church leaders and the lay leaders among them will take this seriously and really delve into this.
Thank you, Bill, and blessings for the ministry that you do.
Thank you.
all the concern about people falling away from church, we often overlook a tremendous resource which parishes do have: men. Research and lived experience both show us that it's men who can provide the enthusiasm and sense of commitment that keep families Catholic and actively involved, that enrich parish life. But as any priest will tell you, men can be tough to motivate. There's a great organization out there that's specifically focused on the spiritual lives of men, the Catholic Men's Leadership Alliance. Dan Donaldson is vice president of CMLA, and he's here to tell us about a special event coming up for Catholic men. Dan, thanks for being with us. What do you have on the horizon?
Thanks, Bill. I feel very blessed to be a part of the show. The Catholic Men's Leadership Alliance is hosting the Heroic Men's Summit on June 10th at 11 a.m. Central. It goes from 11 to 1. And the theme of it is Go Make Disciples. It's a free event, and any man can register for it at heroicmen.com or go to heroicmen.com/go. Again, heroicmen.com or heroicmen.com/go. It's going to be an amazing event with three different great speakers. First, we'll have Justin Fatica on from Hard as Nails Ministry. He has an incredible testimony about how he became a missionary disciple. But he's just a really inspiring speaker, and you definitely want to be on early so you can hear from Justin. Then we will have Jeremy Rivera, who is a former evangelical pastor. And he'll be talking about how we've all been given special gifts, and they're all different. But each man has special gifts that can be utilized to be a missionary disciple. And so you'll grow in your confidence on the fact that you have been endowed with gifts from God to be a missionary disciple. And then we will have the guy that wrote the book on missionary discipleship. We'll have Curtis Martin from the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. He's the president. He's the founder. He's an amazing author and speaker. And like I said, he wrote a book, Making Missionary Disciples. I would just suggest get that book. But, boy, you will definitely want to be on to hear from Curtis just about what it means to be a missionary disciple. So, again, great event coming up June 10th, 11 to 1 Central. Register for free at heroicmen.com or heroicmen.com/go.
Now, this being an online event, it's accessible via a variety of devices. I assume you can get it on your phone, your computer, your iPad, all of the above?
Absolutely. We have thousands of men from all over the world join us for these events, and pick your device, and you'll be able to join us. But I want to encourage you, don't just attend by yourselves. Invite another brother to join you, or more. We actually, when you register for the event, we actually have a discussion guide for the event. So you can actually gather for the event as a group. We have lots of men that actually do that. They gather a group of guys, they watch the event together as a group and discuss it together as a group. It will also be recorded, so you can actually do it as a group later. So we want to encourage you, don't just do it by yourself. If that needs to be you, yeah, then do it. But we do want to encourage you to participate in the event with another man or more.
What's your take on men and faith? We do know from a wide variety of research that the father in the family is a critical factor in the spiritual life of his wife and his children. But we also know that guys are sometimes reluctant to step up. They're a little shy in matters of faith. How do you light a fire under people?
I think there's a whole host of ways to do that, but I think the first way to light the fire is to focus on our relationship with Jesus Christ and His church. As you mentioned, Bill, men, you are so important. Your importance in the faith of your family cannot be underscored. If a Christian man practices his faith and is active and involved with his family in practicing his faith, prays with his family, goes to church with his family, 92% of children will go on to practice their faith into adulthood. The importance of a man practicing his Christian Catholic faith cannot be underscored enough. You matter. You are so important. First of all, your relationship with Jesus Christ, he loves you. He wants to have a relationship with you, but he wants to have a relationship with your kids too. And they need you. They need a daddy that's actively practicing his faith because they're going to follow him.
Well, once again, where do people get information, figure out how to sign up?
Just simply go to heroicmen.com/go or just simply heroicmen.com to sign up for our Heroic Men's Summit on June 10th. Go and be a disciple, and it's from 11 to 1 Central on June 10th. Heroicmen.com.
Dan Donaldson, thanks very much for being with us. This sounds like something that guys would want to find out about.
Ben, you, Bill, thanks so much, and God bless you.
Sons of God, hear his holy word. Gather round the table of the Lord. Eat his body, drink his blood, and we'll sing a song of love. Alleluia, 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 alleluia.
If you've been listening to these shows online but would like to hear them on the radio, tell your local Catholic station. Free Expression with Bill Castle is available for broadcast free of charge. Ask your Catholic station to contact us by email, billcastle@sbcglobal.net. That's B-I-L-L-K-A-S-S-E-L, all one word, billcastle@sbcglobal.net. And don't forget to support your local station. In this time of censorship and so-called cancel culture, Catholic radio is becoming increasingly important as an alternative media source. Our programming is based on the Word of God and the teaching of His Church, and we bring you the factual, truthful information you aren't getting from the mainstream media. Support Catholic radio. Your generosity keeps Catholic outlets on the air, and donations to broadcast ministries can be tax deductible. Urge your friends and relatives to tune in as well. Be with us next time when we explore other aspects of religious communication and look deeper into the great Christian heritage of free expression. Free Expression with Bill Castle is a production of Good Shepherd Catholic Radio and Company Publications, where good books, good music, and good radio are always good company. Dan Curris provided technical assistance. Theme and incidental music are by Dan Adam. The program was produced and directed by Bill Castle. This is Good Shepherd Catholic Radio.